Good evening and welcome to Tuesday's Late Debate. Joining us here in Studio 10 tonight, we have Fianna Fáil Senator Mary Fitzpatrick, spokesperson for Housing, Local Government and Heritage, Michael Healy-Ray, Independent TD for Kerry, and Mark Ward, Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Midwest. And in studios down the corridor, we have Orla Hegarty, Assistant Professor of Architecture at UCD, and Danny McConnell, Political Editor with the Irish Examiner. Now, we want to hear from you, so do please get in touch. You can text us on 51551. You can email latedebate@rte.ie or tweet to @latedebaterte. Now, just to cheer us all up, Danny McConnell, I'm going to go to you first because I see this evening you're reporting that ministers are telling you that it will take a miracle for Dublin to emerge from this current level 3 plus restrictions next month.
Yeah, it's very clear from within the cabinet the mood is not good in relation to Dublin. They're very worried about the trend, the continually ongoing trend of cases in the capital, and obviously instances like Oliver Bond, Street Flats, and kind of the rave out in the farmland in Darren McCullough's land in Meath. There's certainly a constant cause for concern. And, you know, I think that there was a clear message from the epidemiologists and from the other medical people that, you know, would pretty much only be getting to a stabilisation at the end of the 3 week period anyway. So it's pretty clear that should things continue in the way they are after the next 10 days, I think Dublin is likely to expect another lockdown period.
And of course, more reporting this evening about 8 other counties on the brink of further restrictions, possibly.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, the guidance is that the government is going to wait for NPHET's meeting on Thursday, where a kind of a recommendation is expected to come out of that. But the mood music is clearly all going in one way. And I suppose what we've been expected or told to expect is, you know, an NPHET decision on Thursday to go to that cabinet subcommittee on Friday, and then maybe a formal cabinet decision later that day. So it'll kind of almost repeat the choreography of last weekend. But, you know, the signs are worrying. It's clear. But, you know, again, there is that debate going on within government of whether or not we should stick to the strict public health advice, or do economic concerns need to kind of weigh in? Because is it realistic for a country to be dipping in and dipping out of higher levels of restriction, or, you know, or do we all just need to get used to the reality that that's what we're facing over this next 6 to 9 months?
Okay, well, that's something I'll be putting to my panel later on in the programme, but and I want to get back to all of that. But first, I want to get to the panel's views on eviction bans and rent freezes, because this came up in the Dáil today. We had, of course, a total ban on evictions introduced in March at the start of this COVID crisis, but that was removed at the end of August, and it was replaced with legislation that protected tenants who could prove that their income had been impacted by the pandemic. Today, opposition TDs called on the government to reinstate the blanket ban.
Renters need the assurance that they will not be evicted, that the roof over their head is secure. Your government's argument for lifting the ban on evictions and rent increases was that the economy was opening up and the crisis was receding. Now, this is clearly not the case. This is manifestly not the case.
But it says everything about the government's approach, that renters seem to be the bottom of the pile for you. We need emergency legislation, Taoiseach. We need to have foresight on this. This is going to be a real issue. Debts are going to be crystallised. People are going to be out in the street. So we want to see a ban on evictions. We want to see you do something on this and do it quickly.
And that was, of course, Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou MacDonald and the Labour leader Alan Kelly. Mary Fitzpatrick, renters seem to be at the bottom of the pile for this government, says Alan Kelly.
Yeah, I think it's really a disservice to renters for any politician to use language like that and to misrepresent the situation. I come from a constituency of Dublin Central where there is less than 10% home ownership in parts of the constituency. So very high dependency on rental accommodation. And the fact of the matter today is there are protections in place for renters. There is a ban on evictions for renters today, and that ban will continue until January. There is also a ban on rent increases. And most importantly, extra resources have been put in place to support renters. There is rent allowance available to people who are affected by COVID. There is HAP payment. There is homeless HAP payment. But more importantly, Threshold, MABS and the PRTB, they're all being resourced to support renters. So nobody, and this is really important for renters listening in tonight, who like the rest of us are COVID exhausted, really worried and anxious for our futures. They need to know they are protected. And none of them need to hear politicians scaremongering. Politicians need to work to support renters, to support all of our citizens constructively.
Mark, your party leader was scaremongering.
No, I don't think so. I think it's bonkers to evict anybody during the pandemic.
But as Mary Fitzpatrick is saying there, that you can't under the current legislation that's in place.
Oh, but you can, like, and some of the rent activation stuff that Mary was talking about in relation to rent supplement and HAP, you have to be on the local authority list to get them. There's a big cohort of people that are over the threshold for social housing, and they cannot afford a mortgage at the boy because of that. So that's the problem we have. We need to reinstate the ban. We need to leave it in place, and we need it in place, not indefinitely.
But just to explain to people again, the change, there was this blanket ban. Nobody could be evicted for any reason up until August, from March until August. And since August, if you can show that the reason you can't pay your rent is because you've been affected by, you've lost your income.
Your income has been reduced.
Because of the pandemic. You are protected in that scenario. So who is vulnerable then?
Everybody is vulnerable. Everybody is vulnerable in a pandemic. By the time that you're able to...
But who's
what I'm saying is there is a lot of hoops and red tape that you have to get through in order to prove that your income has deteriorated. The way it is at the moment with the restrictions changing all the time, you could be in work 1 week and you could be out of work the following week. So that is constantly changing all the time.
Mary, that is the case, isn't it?
Okay. First of all, the way you prove that your income has been affected by COVID is you're unable to pay your rent. I mean, I'm dealing with people every day who work in either low-income jobs or in the gig economy, whose incomes have been affected by COVID, whose incomes have been reduced and who are struggling to pay their rents. But the reality of it is, there are supports available to people, and we need, as politicians, to make that clear. We need to legislate to make those supports available. We need to allocate funds to support people who are in distress. This is people's real lives.
Why not go that step further? Because what has changed in the pandemic?
I'll tell you why. Because we're going to talk about later antisocial behaviour in public housing estates, or we're going to talk about antisocial behaviour on the streets of Dublin or any place. What does a landlord do? Be they the city council or be they be a private landlord, if you have a tenant who is refusing to pay the rent, not only refusing to pay the rent, running up massive arrears and abusing their neighbours, their community, our city, our country. What do you do if there's a blanket ban on evictions with those people?
Michael Healy-Ray, this eviction legislation was debated in the Dáil in July. At the time you put your hand up, you said, look, I am a landlord, I want to acknowledge that, and some were suggesting that you shouldn't have a vote on that legislation because you would have a particular perspective.
Well, I mean, if you were to follow that through, so if there's a debate on farming or agriculture, and if you have a public representative, a TD for instance, who has a farm at home, or if you have a person who has buses for hire, or if you have a person who was a teacher, are they all supposed to be debarred then from partaking of debates? The opposite would
You're probably the most substantial landlord, though, yes, in the Dáil, are you? I mean, how many tenants do you have?
Well, could I just put it to you this way? It would probably be the exact opposite, that people who are involved, if you take farming, for instance, if there's a debate on farming, and I respect everybody's right to debate in whether they had a farm or not, but if you have a person who has the trials and the tribulations that every other farmer has, and if there's a debate inside the Dáil, not disrespecting anybody else inside there, but who would be the most knowledgeable person to partake of that debate? Only it would be the person who'd own the farm at home, because they'd have those problems already. It's like if there's a teacher inside the Dáil who was a teacher, I'm sure that that person would be better versed at dealing with issues maybe than I would be. So everybody brings their own knowledge and their own practical common sense. But when it comes to the problem, Katie, that you're discussing here now and protecting people's homes, of course, when people like Mary Lou today and with Alan Kelly, when they were saying what they were saying, so what I would call, because of very genuine concerns that
they were
playing
all politics. They were playing politics.
No.
Good old fashioned playing politics.
Sure, I didn't interrupt you now, Mary. And I'm not here to be a spokesperson for those people, but I believe when people aren't inside in the room, you should, you can't.
We're all right. We've got Mark here to defend Mary Lou's honour.
But and I know what you're saying about playing to the gallery, and of course, maybe a certain amount of that goes on. But we all are concerned about people's rights to have the roof over their head protected. Of course we are. Every one of us. And nobody has a monopoly on that, whether you're Sinn Féin or whether you're independent or whoever you are. Nobody has a monopoly on that concern, because we're all concerned. But there has to be a level of common sense. Now, there's another sector of people who nobody seems to talk about because it's not popular to do so. And that is the person who perhaps owns the property, because they don't really own it. It might be in their name, but they're dealing with a bank. They're paying the property tax. They're maintaining the property to the highest standards. They're insuring the property. If something goes wrong with it, they're responsible for it. And remember, if you hound or drive those people out of that sector in Irish society, the one thing that successive governments have proven is that the Irish governments of perhaps the future, of the present and of the past, have been unable to take care of the housing needs of the people of this country. So what has to happen is there is a private sector out there. And those people, remember, are tax collectors. Every time they collect money, over half of it goes in tax. Then they're left, they have to pay their bills.
You're talking about yourself, though, really, Mike Healy. Are you in that position? Do you have mortgages outstanding, Katie, on a lot of your properties?
Well, let me put it this way. Again, if you've...
Rather than talking about them as if they're separate entities.
If there's a farmer sitting in front of you who's talking about agricultural issues, I'm talking in general terms about a sector of society who provide housing accommodation to people. And they do so, but it's not as though that it's any great, big, fancy thing to be involved in. There are a lot of trials and a lot of tribulations. And those people, they can't be hounded out of the market, because if they are, who's going to make up that shortfall? They're responsible for providing an awful lot of accommodation in Ireland. And like I say, they're collecting taxes, they're giving over half of what they collect in tax, and they have an awful lot of responsibilities. So when you talk about blanket bans, what happens if you have people in a property who are refusing to pay rent, not because they're unable to do so, but because they don't want to pay rent, and they want to what I would call play the system? And there is every protection in the world, and I want protections to be in place for tenants, but I also want protections to be in place for the people who own the property and for a thing called fair play to be there.
Okay, can I put that to Mark? Mark, isn't that a scenario that some landlords will be faced with? That you now know there's a blanket ban and you can't be evicted. So there's a bit of moral hazard comes into then, in terms of if somebody doesn't want to pay their rent.
And I wouldn't have the figures, but I'd say that's only a really minority, really small minority of people. We have people coming to me at the moment in relation to, you're talking about social housing supports, RAS tenants and HAP tenants, who are at the getting notices to quit because their landlord wants to sell up, he wants to move in, wherever it might be. So these are people that are good tenants, that have been paying their rent, are now faced with notice to quit and evictions. And because of the housing markets that's out there, there's nowhere for these people to go. So we are evicting people in the middle of a pandemic, out for nowhere to go. We're meant to be helping people. So these people could end up going into temporary accommodation, into homeless hubs, into hotels, which is not suitable at this moment.
Katie, can I just say in response to that, and I have those constituents as well, they are my constituents who are facing that prospect, a landlord saying, I'm selling up. And it's kind of both sides of the argument there. Like Michael, on the one hand, is talking about the landlord, who is the potential selling up and getting out of the market. And Mark is talking about the tenants. Right here in the middle, honestly, that's the challenge. We have to increase supply. But in the short term, it's about supporting renters. And that's what the government is doing. And in that scenario, and I know this real life scenario, where a tenant comes to me, the landlord is selling up, the first question I ask them is, are they willing to sell to the council? The council is buying because Dara O'Brien, the Minister for Housing, has instructed the councils to buy the houses, to call the bluff, to actually acquire properties where there is a tenant about to be evicted. So the government is taking every practical step and putting all the funds that are available to support renters. And that's why it is so disingenuous and so damaging for any politician to scaremonger on this subject.
OK, I want to go to Orla Hegarty. Good evening, Orla.
Hello.
Orla, you think the government has painted itself into something of a corner because of the policies that they have pursued in relation to the private rental sector?
Well, just following the conversation there about homelessness, I mean, the reason people were ending up in homelessness was largely from evictions from the private rental sector. So obviously there's a concern there that if evictions come back, that might happen. But what's also been happening is that we know we've had very high rents in Dublin. The more the state now steps in and obviously supports rent through supplements or through having to rehouse people who become homeless, and the more that they do that at high levels, they're maintaining rents at high levels. Maybe and preventing them falling, which is what might be needed. But that's also tied into the strategy for new build housing, which is really all very market dependent and reliant on high prices, both in housing for sale and in rentals. So we have, I suppose, a very unstable situation for the last 6 months or more now, whereby in Dublin we've seen a lot of the tourist accommodation obviously not in use, and it's estimated that there were more than 5,000 of entire homes in Dublin City that were being used by Airbnb and other platforms. We've a lot of students who haven't come back to the city or might only be coming back staying places in a part-time basis this month who won't be here for the academic year. And we've had people who are now working remotely or considering their options of not having to live in the city. So if you look at all of those forces, we should be seeing a lot more loosening up in availability of accommodation in the city. And naturally, we should be seeing rents fall as a result of that. But maybe it's early days to see that. But that then ties into the strategy for new build, because if rents start to fall, we may not see the strategy coming through whereby the international investors won't see Dublin as attractive anymore.
I would agree, actually, sorry, just on that point, Orla. I am seeing that in the last month or so, where constituents who had been on the housing list, who had been homeless maybe, who had been approved for HAP but had been unable to secure private rented accommodation over maybe a course of 9 months. But in the last month or two, you're absolutely correct. The Airbnb drying up, the students not coming back to Dublin, there has been an opening up.
And are rents actually falling? Because if you look up rents, it doesn't look like it on paper.
No. But I don't see the rents falling. But
Michael, tell me, are you reducing rents for people?
What we are missing...
Michael, are you reducing rents for people?
Katie, I have done all of that. No, Katie...
No, I'm just wondering. I'm not talking about you personally, sorry. I want to get a sense of the market. Is that happening now out there?
What we are lacking, Katie, in the housing market is... The big thing that we had in the past, and I'll just talk, for instance, about Kerry County Council. We have a very excellent council. We have excellent members on the council. But the one thing that they've lacked over many years now is what we did have in the past, even in bad times. We had, for instance, a thing called single rural cottages. That was if a family had land that they could provide to the council, they'd give half an acre. The council would come along, they'd build a house on that land. It would be given to that family at affordable rent. Perhaps when the family would work up a bit, you know, when the young lads would get a bit stronger and go out working and things, the family could buy that house. They'd own that house then, and they would then be able to transfer it down along the line to the children, the grandchildren. So you secured a family unit on that farm. That stopped many years ago, and the amount of single rural cottages that we've built, for instance, in the last 10 or 15 years is minuscule. Another thing that happened in our local authority, our council came along and bought fields and went in and cleared out the field and built maybe 10 or 15 or 20 local authority houses. And you housed all those people. All of that has stopped. And despite all the meetings and all the policy groups and all the research that, and again, I'm not criticising one government. I'm saying successive governments have failed in this. that they've stopped doing. All they're doing is talking about it. And they seem to be throwing money into this strategy and that strategy, but they're not bloody well building houses that they should be building and providing our local authorities who have expertise in dealing with the people that are on their housing list. And another thing we're lacking, if you take every town and every village with empty properties, if we could put incentives in place to have those properties brought back into
Orla, you've banged that drum into those villages and into those towns
and put people living up over the shops which have been left idle, put people back into towns and villages in proper accommodation at affordable money.
Orla,
that can be done.
I would totally support Michael on that. We also have a looming jobs crisis in the construction industry, and largely more so on a regional basis, in, even more than in Dublin. Putting money into local economies with local authority-led smaller schemes and supporting people to live near villages and towns is the most efficient way of using the money that's available. 100%. In many parts of the country, they can be delivered for under €200,000, including VAT and all the other fees that go with it. And that is money directly into the local authority.
And of course, in this time where many people now are able to work remotely or are being encouraged to work remotely, it might be just
and
the...
Just one thing about how lopsided the whole thing is right now. If you go around Dublin this evening and look at all the cranes up in the skies, what are they building? They're not building houses or apartments or any type of accommodation. They're building office space. And the bloody office spaces that we have in Dublin are all empty at the moment because the people are gone home working from at home, and the future seems to be remote working. So what's going to happen to, we're going to have all this office space built in our cities and all that, and we're not doing what we should be doing, and that's making affordable living accommodation in our towns and in our villages the most attractive place in the world anybody could be living now is in the countryside or in more rural areas or in smaller villages and smaller towns. So that's why everybody should come to Kerry, because we'll be able to take care of them in some shape or fashion.
Yeah, there's loads of fields outside Kilgarvan waiting for development. Danny, you were writing about this whole area this morning. Where do you see it going?
It's kind of difficult to know. Ultimately, I suppose the government have a very difficult decision to make in relation to the rent evictions and the pandemic unemployment payment. I mean, they've made it very clear today that as of now, there's no move, there's no give. But, you know, I think the calls from the opposition are only likely to escalate. One was sensing kind of during the day that there may be movement on the PUP payment in the budget, that they may look at going back up to the 350 per week. I think the ban on evictions may be a different matter, because we've heard for, you know, since time immemorial that, you know, banning evictions was sort of against the constitution, etc. like that, and only COVID gave a limited scope to do it in very short, you know, for a very short period of time. And certainly the mood music from several ministers is that attorneys general, you know, going back some time, have always said, listen, this is a very dangerous or a very sort of dubious sort of kind of measure to bring in, and the Taoiseach gave voice to that in the Dáil Chamber today. But I was certainly thinking in relation to the PUP payment, I think those calls are landing from the opposition. I do think there's a recognition that if you're going to shut down Dublin in particular, and if there is any kind of sense that, you know, the other eight counties are likely to close down, then you can't leave people on that lower level, particularly if they're on, you know, if they're in kind of better paid jobs. Like the there is an equity in the new scheme in the new rates, is that if you should be put on relatively, you know, at under the sort of the lower rates. If you're earning in around that, you'll get what you were earning. But it's obviously, if you're earning more than the 300 or 350 a week, you're going to be cut quite substantially. So I think there may be some give on that in the coming weeks. Mary may, as the government representative, may have some information on that.
Mary?
Well, what I would say is that I agree with what Danny said in terms of Dublin, what we all have recognised about Dublin. And we are in a real crisis situation here. You know, Michael talked about making the villages and the countryside a place to go and live. We want people to come back and live in the city. We want them to live on Dorset Street. We want them to live in the city again. And Dara O'Brien, to be fair to him, the Minister for Housing, he has said the priority is to fund local authority bills, give the money. He's given already 40 million to the local authorities to renovate and regenerate the voids, the vacant units that have been shamelessly left vacant for far too long. He is prioritising self-build from local authorities. And Orla's absolutely right. The state can build homes much cheaper than we can buy them on the private market. But in terms of the pandemic unemployment payment, and there is already a recognition from government that Dublin needs extra support. There's already a 30% increase on the restart grant. The pandemic unemployment payment will be extended. But in the budget, the government has signalled that it is going to look at what more can be done. The pandemic unemployment payment has been extended out to April. We've already put close to 4 billion into it. It's really important that we support people through this crisis and we give people hope. We have to maintain the solidarity that was brought about at the start
of this. Well, I mean, I think people who lost their PUP or who had their PUP drastically cut will be questioning the idea of we're all in this together and the solidarity you just talked about there. Mary?
Yeah, I on what basis?
Well, if we're all in this together, why is my if I was one of those people, why is my PUP payment gone back down to 200? And
it hasn't gone down to 200. It hasn't gone down to 200, and it won't go down unless you were earning below that amount of money. The pandemic unemployment payment has been extended till April. It has been maintained, and it is still open for new applications.
It's been reduced down to 300.
Hold on a second. So, it depends on what you're earning. It depends on what you're earning. So we have a ridiculous. I didn't cut across. You, Michael, I did behave myself. I had situations where there were constituents where you had a young person in a house who'd been working part time, earning maybe €100 a week, and a parent who was earning in excess of 350. When the pandemic unemployment payment was introduced, they all got the 350. It was ridiculous. That had to be corrected. It had to be extended. We have to ensure that people can plan towards the future. We also have to look at what more can be done in terms of more importantly, can I just say, 7.9 billion has been put into job stimulus, to creating new jobs, to retraining, to reskilling. We have
This isn't the Mary show now. Like, you can't be left get away with what you just said, that it was ridiculous for people to be getting €350. If you were the person
Earning 100.
If you were the person getting the €350, you wouldn't think it was ridiculous. You'd think, well, yes, I need this €350 because I have obligations, I have debts, whether it was people with commitments that they had to pay. So to come on the radio and say...
That's not what I said, Michael. You know that's not what I said.
You said... Well,
I said for one person
I have a
who
memory
was earning
100... I heard exactly what you said.
What I said, if one
you
person was earning 100...
it was ridiculous to be giving them €350.
If they had been earning 100. If they'd been earning 100.
Mark, I want to bring you in.
You'd be damn glad of it if you were getting it.
There's tens of thousands of people in Dublin this week who were getting the 350 because they were earning more than €350 on a weekly basis. That €350 has now been cut to 300.
Correct.
That's right across Dublin.
That is correct.
Not being extended out to April, or that's not being extended indefinitely. So that's what we're looking to get back reinstated, is that 350 for the people that were earning over
that. And the government has signalled that they will look in the budget, which is 2 weeks away.
But signalling is not going to put food on the table between now and next 2 weeks.
To be fair, Mark, it is an evolving situation.
Okay. Why is Mary Fitzpatrick blaming tenants for the antisocial behaviour at the weekend? What's her proof? Inhumane to evict people during a pandemic. That's a text we just got in, because I want to move on to that issue of the Oliver Bond, that party, the latest outrage of a gathering during the pandemic, that outdoor party at the Oliver Bond flat complex in the southwest inner city on Saturday night. Dublin City Council Head of Housing Brendan Kenny today warning that residents of local authority housing complexes risk eviction if they organise large parties on council property.
Yes. Well, no, that's a sledgehammer to crack a nut. You can come along and say that everybody in life can make a mistake. Everybody can get carried away. Something can happen. And maybe a small gathering would happen and it would become a bigger gathering. And I'm not a spokesperson for the people that had that party
that
night.
And I should say, I understand they were not actually residents of Oliver Bond flats.
I heard that as well. And like, it would be awful to think that people would be fearful that if something like this was to happen on one occasion, of course, if people were continuously having parties or raves or, you know, endangering people's public health by having gatherings like that, of course you could say, well, hold on now, you can't misbehave like that and continue. But I mean, people have to be given a chance. So I mean, to be talking about maybe evicting people because of a once-off thing, that would be ridiculous. But I mean, if they were to continue, and we'll say if we had the same thing another night and another night, but I don't think we will have. And I think that common sense will prevail. prevail and that people will behave themselves and they will know that this is not acceptable to the people, whether it's local authorities that own the property or whether it's individuals that own the property. It won't be accepted by the government. It won't be accepted by the local authority. And people just have to obey by the rules and behave themselves in the interest. It could be their nan, it could be their child or grandchild that would have a low immune system that might get ill because of parties like this. So it's in everybody's best interest to be intelligent, to be cool and calm and not to engage in these type of activities.
Okay. There were questions asked about why the guards were apparently patrolling the area and kind of dropping by, but it wasn't until 11 o'clock, I think, that they said that they asked them to disperse. Mm. But weren't their hands tied? There is no penalties to go with, you know, if you break social distancing regulations or restrictions, I should say. So do we need to look at that again? If the people are going to, you know, throw up their arms when they see this on Monday morning on their or on Sunday on their social media, do we need to give greater powers?
There's a degree of personal responsibility for everybody during this pandemic. So what happened in Oliver Bond shouldn't have happened. Those people that took part in that were not only endangering themselves, but they're also endangering their communities, their families, their friends, their elderly relatives. So that needs to be altered. There's a big issue at the moment, specifically around community guards in Dublin. And we had this debate in the Dáil tonight before we came in here. Community guards haven't been working after the hours of 7 p.m. since March.
That's
since March. That's a contingency roster that was issued by the commissioner in March, that community guards have not been working since March after the hours of 7 p.m.
Was that because guards are redeployed to other areas because of the pandemic?
At the start, there was guards redeployed, or not even redeployed. They were doing other PR kind of stuff, which was really helpful at the time, as in collecting prescriptions, collecting shopping for people and stuff. And that was really welcome at the time. But over time, that need kind of went away. And the guards are still on that roster. So the problem is, the people in Oliver Bond were frightened. They were worried. They were concerned. They contacted the guards. I don't know whether the guards done loops or not did loops. But the feedback that I'm getting is that the guards did not respond until 5 hours later. Now, that's not good enough. But that can be seen, not just in Oliver Bond, that can be seen with an increase.
Just to say, the guards are that is not what the statement from the guard, the press office, said. They say that they were in the area and they were patrolling and that they asked the groups, the crowd, to disperse at 11 o'clock.
That same scenario is right across Dublin. In relations, we've seen increases in antisocial behaviour. We've also seen increases in the amount of buses being curtailed across Dublin. We've seen a 200% increase in the amount of buses being curtailed from antisocial behaviour in July and August of this year compared to July and August of last year. And this is all just a symptom of the lack of Garda presence within
the communities. But on that evening, if there was a group of people, young people, whatever age, golfers, young people, standing around listening to music, that wouldn't meet the definition of antisocial behaviour, and there isn't any penalties built into the system to penalise people who aren't obeying, aren't wearing masks, or aren't 2 metres apart from each other. Boris Johnson was addressing the nation. I don't know if you caught it a couple of hours ago, and he announced a whole raft of new measures that have been introduced in the UK to try, because they've struggling as we are at this moment, and also penalties for those who flout them.
As for that minority who may continue to flout the rules, we will enforce those rules with tougher penalties and fines of up to £10,000. We will put more police out on the streets and use the army to backfill if necessary.
Fines of £10,000, police on the streets, army backfilling.
For God's sake. Do you know, Boris is Boris. Thanks be to God, we don't have to do things like that in Ireland. The Irish people, when there's rules introduced, of course we had the exception at parties like the one we cited earlier on. But when the Irish people are asked to put their shoulder to the wheel, and when they're asked to do something, if it's reasonable at all, and every commissioner of An Garda Síochána and every inspector and every sergeant and down to the local guards will always tell you that Irish people, on the rule are compliant and they do their best to comply with rules and regulations and new rules and regulations when they're brought in. But to be talking about during a pandemic that if you step out of line and if you do something wrong that you could potentially have to face a fine of £10,000 or euros, I think that's ridiculous. I think it's outrageous. That's not how you bring people with you. If you want to bring people with you, you explain the situation. We're trying to stop people of getting sick and trying to stop people of dying.
But aren't we blue in the face explaining that situation?
Yes, but you must admit that on the overall basis, people in Ireland do their best to comply. And I do not think that our government should go coming out with anything like what Boris has come out with tonight and coming on with this big stick approach. What you should be doing is saying to the people, look, we're doing this because we want to protect people. And like, who can argue with that statement by government? So I would dearly wish to see our government coming along with that type of an attitude and that type of approach. In other words, going to the people with your two hands out like this rather than going to the people with your fist clenched like this, there's an awful difference. If you want to bring people with you, do it in a nice way. Don't be aggressive like Boris tonight, threatening people. Don't get people to do something, especially at a time like this, by threatening them. And I just wouldn't agree with that type of talk.
Okay, Mary, another text in here. Katie, unfortunately, people are idiots when it comes to COVID-19. It is only when we see images on the news of partygoers and ravers being arrested by the riot squad that people will get the message, says Ed.
Okay, well, look, we do all have to take personal responsibility. It is all about our hands, our face, our mask and keeping our space and acting like we've got the virus and we don't want to give it to anybody else. And it is about trying to help each other along. This is a really stressful time. It is a really upsetting time for everybody. Whatever age you are, none of us have gone through this before and we all need to help each other. The Gardaí, to be fair to them, at the start of this, with support of government, the force was increased by about 25%. There was extra personnel and extra vehicles. There was new legislation introduced under the Health Act, which did give extra powers. The Gardaí, their approach, though, has been to encourage, to support, to inform, and to try and bring people along. It hasn't been to pursue criminal convictions. And there is plenty of criminal legislation there that can be pursued. So I do think questions have to be examined. And I never said, and I never blamed the tenants of any local authority complex for the antisocial behaviour that was shown on social media. I would never do that.
No, but you made a more general point that there is antisocial behaviour within local authority.
Not just in local authority, in private rented accommodation, right across. Antisocial behaviour occurs every place. There's no boundaries to antisocial behaviour. You meet rude
people. In that line, what about Mark's point about the community? I'm very taken aback by the idea that those rosters are in place still and that there's no community guards after 7 p.m.
So I don't. That's not my experience of it. I'm not saying Mark is misinforming me. I'm just saying it's not my experience of it. I met last week with the chief superintendent in Diamore North, which would be the North City. And yes, he agrees. There are increased levels of antisocial behaviour that the Gardaí are responding to. But they are responding in a measured way. And they are trying to get people to take personal responsibility, to cooperate. And when necessary, they are pursuing criminal prosecutions. That work is continuing day in, day out.
Can I? One area that I know that the Gardaí have been given powers in is in relation to publicans, Michael, that if they see a breach of the regulations in relation to the COVID-19 restrictions, that they can now shut down a premises.
Correct. Now, first of all, with regard to our pubs, and thankfully our pubs are now again opened, and I welcome that. I believed that they were kept closed for too long. It was unnecessary, in my honest opinion. And I'm glad that people will realise now that there is an increase in the instances of infection that happened before the pubs were actually opened, because otherwise the pubs would get the blame for it. Our publicans in Ireland are much maligned by present and past governments.
You actually said in the Dáil, was it in the Dáil or in a tweet, that you think the government actually dislikes publicans?
Yes, I'd actually go one step further. I questioned at times, do some members in our government actually hate our publicans that much that they went after them in what I would call a very unfair way during the term of this government and the past government. And
would you not accept that they were following the advice that was handed down to them by NPHET? And in fact, not even fully, because the NPHET advice, as I understand it, was that they could open from this week if there had been 14 days of good numbers, whereas they just went ahead and accepted that they could now open.
No, because if you look at what they did, if you look at what the government did to businesses, if you were a hairdresser or a shopkeeper or the owner of a garden centre or a hardware shop, you were allowed to open at a certain time.
But your people don't congregate in hairdressers or garden centres, do they?
But sure, of course, if they're inside in the local supermarket.
They go in and do their business and come out. Yes. They don't congregate in groups.
Our publicans are very responsible. Every September they have to go before the courts. The Gardaí can comment, locals can comment, anybody can come along and object to they getting their licence to carry on their business. The majority of our publicans in Ireland are not just publicans with the last year or two. They're there with generations. They're not just even their own family, but probably their parents and grandparents before them in many cases. And they run what I would call good houses. They're responsible people. If they had been given the opportunity months ago, they would have ran the public houses in the way they're doing now, making sure that people are keeping their distance, making sure that people are behaving. And they were perfectly capable of doing that all along. But instead, the government went on what I would call a witch hunt of publicans by keeping them closed. And nobody in government can explain to me or justify. And the nonsense that they came out with, and this word which I actually hate, wet pubs, that's a stupid statement to be making. A pub is a goddamn pub. It's a place you sell drink. And if that pub happens to sell food, and what genius then, whether it's in NPHET or whether it was in government, decided that because you have a bit of food in this hand and an alcoholic drink in this hand, that that was going to protect you from the virus. I mean, talk about rubbish. I mean, whether you had the pint on its own and no food, wasn't that going to be the exact same thing? Was the food going to be an automatic protectant against the virus? I mean, that was a nonsensical thing to do. And it divided some of our communities in that some pubs were opened and more weren't. It just didn't make sense. But look,
are you worried now they're going to have to close again, though?
Well, you see,
we're looking at eight counties now edging towards level three again.
Everybody's worried about what's happening now because the thing is changing so quickly and so rapidly. And who knows what the situation is going to be in another 14 days. But I'm sure of one thing. In 14 days' time, there will be a lot of changes in Ireland and the way that the whole situation is being handled.
What do you mean by that?
Because I'm fearful of the trend. I'm fearful of the way it's going. So the rules and the level that we're at, whether it's in Dublin or around the rest of the country, I do think that will change in the next 14 days. I'd love it if I was wrong.
All right, you do think that we're facing into new levels and new restrictions. Yeah. Mary, you're a witch hunt. You're on a witch hunt. You hate the publicans.
Not at all. God, but I'd give my right arm for a pint in a pub in Dublin. Not at all. Dublin's a much sadder place that our pubs are closed. And they're public houses where the public congregated and met and sang and laughed and cried. So there's no witch hunt. We're all very sad that the public houses in Dublin are closed tonight and that they haven't reopened and that they've been closed for 6 months. But I don't share the pessimism and the defeatism that Michael expresses. I have to believe we suppressed the virus before, and if we all make the enormous efforts that are being asked of us, we can suppress it again. And we have to suppress it. Because it isn't acceptable for us, for our families, for our young people, for our elderly people, to think that we're going to go into a level four or level five and back into a lockdown. We're not in a lockdown now. We don't need to go there. We have to have as our target to come back to level two or level one.
It's the first time I was ever called a pessimist. Do you know, I've been called lots of things.
But sorry.
I think I'm the exact opposite. I'm an eternal optimist. I always look at the glass as being half full rather than half empty. But again, you're entitled to your opinion.
I want to bring in Danny. Danny, as we were talking at the top of the programme, Dublin, as you say, looking, the numbers are just in such a bad way right now, and the direction they're going in, it doesn't look too great in terms of getting back down to level two.
No, it doesn't, but I would kind of almost share Michael's view in terms of that, like, over the last 6 months, we've had what I would consider a very monotone discussion around COVID. It's been, and maybe for justifiable reasons, it's been led by public health discussions. And, you know, the airwaves are full of doctors of all sorts, GPs, epidemiologists, virologists, and all the rest of it. But, like, a much wider context has been missing from the conversation. That's the social impact of COVID-19. Like, a decade ago, when we were all writing about the economy, like the airwaves were dominated by economists. And again, the social impact of austerity has filtered out for over a decade. So I think we run the risk of this imbalanced conversation doing huge damage. I mean, if you walk through Dublin City Centre now and you see the devastating impact that this has had on shops and small businesses, not just on pubs, but on all sorts of shops, you know, it's a very sad sort of state that we find ourselves in. I think as a nation and as a government, I think they've gotten the balance wrong. I think the fundamental basis of locking Dublin down again was flawed. I don't think there was any real reason to justify doing what they did. And ultimately,
sorry, you're saying that there's no reason to justify locking down Dublin happened last week, with the numbers going in the direction they're going.
Yeah, but like the basis of locking down the pubs in Dublin versus not locking down the pubs in all over the country doesn't make sense. What you ultimately had was an assumption from the medical people, without any firm evidence, that, you know, pubs were the cause of this, or pubs or restaurants were a likely cause of this. There's no firm evidence yet to say that that's the case. They've assumed that that's the case, and assuming that people are bringing it in from restaurants into their home. There's also an argument that, you know, if people, you know, in the absence of controlled spaces, are congregating in larger numbers at home, which is then leading to the greater spread of this. Like, I'm all for facts. I'm all for looking at evidence. I mean, let's just, you know, yes, the numbers.
There'll be people now tweeting, you know, Danny, wondering where you got your epidemiology degree.
Well, sorry, I'm someone who reads facts and looks at an awful lot of numbers, and you know, just because I may be bringing up a slightly contrarian view, it doesn't mean it's not valid. Like, I take the dangers of COVID extremely seriously, but I do think we've gotten the balance of this argument. I think it's out of balance. And look at someone who is an expert in looking at economic numbers and stats is Dan O'Brien, and he was a rock of sense on Claire Byrne last week, and he's been a rock of sense in his columns in the Irish Independent over the last number of weeks. The rate of infections and the rate of hospitalizations are about 1/13 of where they were at the start of the crisis in April or March or April. Yes, the numbers are creeping up, but they're nowhere near where they were. But yet the government took what I thought was a pretty, I thought, disproportionate decision to lock Dublin down or move it to level 3+ with no notice. And I think the damage to businesses all over the capital, I think, has been horrendous. And I think they're going to, you know, a lot of businesses are not going to come back as a result of it.
Mary, are you nodding along with that?
I'm nodding along with, I completely agree that small businesses of all sizes in the city have been damaged enormously. Many people have lost their lives. Many people are very ill. This is
Danny's central point there, is that it was not an evidence-based decision.
No, I don't accept that.
Well, where's the evidence, Mary?
Well, in the NPHET reports, in the deliberations of the subcommittee of the cabinet subcommittee.
No, made,
I mean,
like,
Danny.
But if you listen to Philip Nolan himself, he said there's an assumption there, and you look at his he did a 10-point tweet last week, and he said basically that it takes up to 5 days for the virus to show up in your body. Two, that the tracing only goes back 48 hours. So therefore, 90% of the people that you're talking about or they're tracing are not relevant to the idea of or where you're going to get the virus from. There's no firm...
Yeah, just to say, Danny, you may not have heard Philip Nolan. I had him on another studio on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And he walked back somewhat from that tweet and said that he may have not been entirely fair to his public health colleagues, and that there is some further detail data that they're
But where is it? Like, I mean, he may have said that, but I mean, ultimately, you know, like in all of the stuff that we've seen from both the NPHET minutes that have gone and both the government decision, there was nothing firm to say that pubs or restaurants or small businesses were the cause and should have been.
Orla.
Yeah, I would accept a lot of the comments there about social isolation and about the risk to businesses. But I think the fundamental problem here is we're not using a science base for a proper risk assessment for any of this reopening. And I think it hasn't been communicated clearly enough to people that there are issues that are not being addressed in the public information, and particularly the one about the difference between indoor and outdoor settings. Indoors is 20 times higher risk. Contacts indoors are 20 times higher risk. 97% of the super spreader events where a lot of people have been contaminated with the virus have been indoors. And if we look at the advice that's been given to people, it's implicitly been told to people that ventilation is a big issue because we talk about different standards for indoor and outdoor. But none of that has been made explicit. And we're really out of line with the international science and with a lot of the advice in other countries on this.
Yeah, can I just, in relation to that, Orla, wasn't there a kerfuffle yesterday in the United States where new data or new reg research was put up on the Centre for Disease Control website, which did acknowledge the role that aerosols play in the transmission of COVID, and therefore obviously ventilation then becomes a much bigger issue for people. And then it disappeared off the website again.
There was, and it seems that there's some controversy about whether that was released in error or whether there's some political involvement there. But I think that the bigger picture is that this controversy has been going on since the spring. It seems to be that lots of different sectors, you know, there's a lot of different silos in there are people who have expertise in engineering and in ventilation. There are people who have expertise in how aerosol particles behave in the air, in indoor environments. And then we have the people who are involved in the medical side and the scientists. So, but fundamentally, if you look what's happening, Dr. Fauci, who's the chief advisor in America and in many other countries, the same advice is being given, is that we know now there is a risk of airborne spread of COVID. We don't know the extent of it, whether it's very virulent like measles or less so, but people in this country have living memory of TB and how that was dealt with, and that was all about ventilation and fresh air. And now that we know there are risks, it's not being communicated to people. So we're not opening pubs on the basis of them being properly ventilated. We're opening them on some arbitrary standard of people feeling safe at 2 metres distance. Now, if a pub or a restaurant isn't adequately ventilated, you're not safe at a 2 metre distance. You know, if within 12 minutes of walking into a crowded restaurant, you will be in an unsafe environment. And there are people working in these environments for long periods wearing visors rather than masks. And there are teachers in schools who are not aware of the fact that good ventilation is absolutely critical at the moment.
And are we just talking about opening windows, Orla? Are we talking about a much bigger engineering project?
Firstly, on the schools, I think we could take a cue from other countries in Europe. Belgium is instructed that all windows and doors be kept open, that children move around more. Denmark is doing similar. They're doing a lot more outdoor activities. They're using other buildings, so churches, community halls, sports centres, whatever else is available, so that they can be in high ceilings and well ventilated spaces. And if we look further, I mean, people are talking about one outdoor party last weekend, but really the hotspots have been in places like meat plants, care homes, direct provision centres, abroad on cruise ships. These are all places where environmental factors are obviously key. I mean, the care homes were an issue in the spring when the weather was cold outside and the windows would have been closed, less so in the summer. The meat plants run at 10 degrees, so obviously they were recirculating chilled air in the summer. Less of an issue now as we go into the winter, and overcrowded bedrooms, and you know, we don't need to go back very far. I mean, the 50 years ago when overcrowded housing was regulated in this country, it was on the basis of how many people shared a bedroom and how much free air was there, and that all came out of a basis of public health. So I think if people understood this more, we would have less of the issues with social isolation. There are people who are cutting down their safe, low risk contacts this week because they've been asked to, when it really won't make any difference because they were low risk in the first place. And then we have business disruptions maybe that are unnecessary. We probably have pubs that have good ventilation and can prove it from the days of smoking.
Have you got good ventilation down in Kilgarvan?
Well, yes, and I mean, all pubs now have good ventilation, and they've a lot of money invested in upgrading their businesses over the years to make them better places to be in. Just one point, you have to always see what people are saying from around the country. Mary, you've gotten under the skin of a lot of people with what you said about the PUP payments. And I have a message here from a lady that I actually know, and this is what it says. How would Mary like to be surviving on €131 per week, which is what I have to survive on? And so you did upset a lot of people with what you said about the PUP payments.
I'm sorry if I upset anybody. That wasn't my intention.
Well, and this lady is not... I know the lady. She's a very respectable person and she has said this. How would Mary like to be surviving on €131 per week? So there are people who have very small incomes and...
I'm very aware of that, yes, Michael.
And it's terribly important that people are given enough money to survive the next number of months because it is such an unusually tough and pressurising time on families and especially low-income families.
I understand that.
Can I just say, just in relation to that and just before we go and then at last minute, Mary... Shocked and gobsmacked is what Mary Lou MacDonald said today, that the announcement or the revelation that there was going to be 10 ministerial advisers approved came on the same day that this move was made with the PUP payments. Was that a bad look?
That she would try to make a political point when so many people are suffering. There's 200,000 people on the pandemic unemployment payment, and I think they deserve more respect than that.
Okay, there I have to go to our break.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And we have a text here. I was brought up in one such country cottage by a humble Catholic parents. That's your once-off cottages. The elites do not get this, says one texter. So what does Mr. Healy Ray, what is Mr. Healy Ray going to say in 3 weeks when the government copy Boris, as we do everything the Brits do? And all over Europe, bars and nightclubs have been linked to virus spread, says another texter. Just in the last couple of seconds there, Mark. The idea that the PUP payments are cut on the same day that these advisers are announced, that these advisers have been approved, is that really a good link, basically?
Of course, it just shows how out of touch this government is when they announce this these special advisers on a week where tens of thousands of people right across Dublin have seen their PUP payment cut from €350 a week to €300, and they're meant to survive on that. So it just goes to show how out of touch this government is in relation to that.
Out of touch, but we are out of time. That's all we have tonight. I want to thank my panel, and I want to thank you all for listening. The programme was produced by Caroline Dalton. Research was by Andrew Fleming. The broadcast coordinator was Elaine Conlon, and Gar Duffy was on sound. And now it's over to Colm Murray on Late Date.